Welcome to Building 72, the podcast brought to you by the Entertainment Arts and Engineering Program at the University of Utah. Thank you for joining your hosts, Adam Hunter and Corinne Lewis, to talk about the video game industry and, you know, probably other stuff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Building 72, the podcast brought to you by the Entertainment Arts and Engineering Program at the University of Utah. I'm Corinne Lewis, and I'm a professor in the program, as well as the undergraduate director here. And as usual, I am joined by my good friend and EAE's amazing alumni and industry manager, Adam Hunter. Today, we were also very excitingly joined by AJ Dimmick, who is alumni from our program, and also started out as the alumni and industry manager for EAE, and then we convinced him, or he convinced us, or something happened, and he became he became our esports director. And my dog just walked in, we are going to talk today and answer some of our student questions about esports. So AJ,
Hello, everybody.
Happy to have you. Thank you for coming. Why don't you introduce yourself? I did a little bit, but you can introduce yourself and then we'll get to the questions.
Hello, everyone. My name is AJ Dimmick. As Corinne said, I am the director of the University of Utah's Varsity Esports Program. What does that mean? The U has a competitive teams in varsity esports, just like a football and a basketball team, a normal college athletics as you understand it. We scholarship 34 students as competitive gamers at the University of Utah and field a League of Legends team, an Overwatch team, a Hearthstone team, and a Rocket League team. It was born out of like every college in the country that has done collegiate esports, and now there are over 200 of them this year. Always is a grassroots student movement, and we have one of the most awesome, greatest active student clubs in the country, known as Crimson Gaming here, that is about 6 years old. And that group of students very much wanted to formalize esports, and they wanted to get money for competitive players that were really good. And so we're starting year before now, so 3 years ago. In 2017, we were able to cobble together budget, kind of make a structure, and we are getting ready for the fourth season of Varsity Esports here. And I am the person that has, I'm someday to write my book about 100 things I screwed up in esports. And we'll talk about a lot of them, but I'm a lot less dumb now about it than I used to be. And so I am here, and you can learn from the things I've done wrong and what we think it is. And we can talk about valid criticisms of esports versus invalid criticisms and kind of what its role is on a college campus.
Do what I say, not what I do, the AJ Dimmick story.
That's right. Yes, indeed.
So let's just dive into the questions that the students gave me to ask you. I probably have a few, and Adam I know has a few, but we'll start here. So how do you explain what you do to other people?
So this is a big conversation, particularly in the esports community. As the person that leads the program in many of the esports programs across the country, hold the title of head coach. I am certainly not the head coach, and I am very conversant in all the games we play. I play all the games that we play. I am in no way, shape, or form an expert in any of the games we play. And just like Mark Harlan is the athletic director of the University of Utah, he would not be conflated with Kyle Whittingham, who was the head football coach at the University of Utah. And the way to articulate what I do, I go get money and resources. And that is what I do for a living. So the room you play in, I'm going to have a lot to do with. The computers you're playing on, I'm going to have a lot to do with. The fact that you play Thursday at 7:30 against Team X, I'm going to have a lot to do with. The people that are broadcasting the game, I'm going to have a lot to do with. The things that you haven't heard of at all that we'll announce someday that we're going to be in some of the time, I'm going to have a lot to do with. So logistics, the background, the money, the theory of the case about what this is in 5 years, I'm going to have a lot to do with. The academic research projects, which we collaborate with, I'm going to have a lot to do with. And making sure that people know that we're here and we exist, I'm going to have a lot to do with. All of which is not making our top laner really good at warding and not being ganked. I'm not going to have a whole lot to do with that. And that's a good thing.
So it sounds like, it's in your title, but you fill the role of an athletic director, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the same thing. And we are very competitive. We want to win. I certainly evaluate the coaches based on if we want to win and do those types of things. But they're all the not fun and the unglamorous parts of what we do here, and most of them are unglamorous, is my job.
They're kind of glamorous. You get to travel some, like when we were traveling.
There's a lot of it that's awesome. I noticed get to take credit and get given credit for a lot of things I did not do here. In the fact that this esports program exists because of that grassroots effort of a bunch of students that insisted it happen and created a community and did all the groundwork to make that community work. And students, Sam Morris, Angie Klingsig, Jordan Runyon, of a bunch of students, Bob Kessler, President Dave Pershing, yourself, a bunch of people that all of which made this happen. And my name does get thrown around a lot to it for a lot of things that it shouldn't. But absolutely. I do the directing part, not the esports part.
Fantastic. You probably have, this isn't to go into too much detail, but you probably have two different conversations with people about like your job and your position and your role based off of whether or not they're familiar with what esports is and what the whole concept is.
There's definitely two different audiences for this. And frankly, there's the important audience is the people that go, so competitive gaming, y'all play like Donkey Kong and like take the high score or something like that. But that's an every single day of my life conversation. And educating people what this is the biggest part. And when I say that's the important part is you don't have to convince the people that are conversing in esports to like it. They don't need convincing. Nor do they have any money to fund it. And so the people that don't know anything about it are the people that need to be sold, that they should know something about it, because they're the ones that are going to provide the resources to get you to be able to do the thing. They're the one bringing the groceries that we get to cook the food. And so, you have that conversation. And the biggest part of that conversation isn't necessarily what it is. It's the scope by which it exists. And the biggest question you have to answer is, how can this be the biggest deal that you say it is? How can this be as important as you say it is? And I've never heard of it or seen it a day in my life. And educating people as to why that is, and that gets into a lot of almost philosophical conversations to an older audience about media consumption and its transition away from mainstream things. Like, my mother is not interested in sports in any way, shape, or form. She knows all about the NBA. She knows all about college football. She knows all about the NFL. She knows who LeBron James is. Those are things that would show up on her radar because of the way that media is consumed. Mm-hmm. And even though she's not interested in it, it's in the zeitgeist, right? It's part of what she has because it's on network television, because it's on ESPN, because it's on all those things that you can't miss. They're there. They're hard to get away from, particularly to people that watch television, and most people do. In this new area of esports, and so the answer to the question of how can this be this big, I don't even know it exists, because they also don't know what Twitch is. They also aren't accustomed to consuming media through free streamed media the way the younger generation is. So there's a gap there about not just what the content is, but how it's delivered. And that is a pretty big thing when you look at Twitch numbers and you get that those numbers on Twitch are you put Netflix, the Netflix audience and the HBO audience, and you put them together, mm-hmm. and then you're getting to those kind of Twitch numbers. And so that's why it's very important. And you also look at who watches this content versus who watches, say, college football. And I'm 42 years old, and I'm on the younger side of the average age of, I'm 41 years old. I gotta stop saying that. I'm doing math wrong. I'm gonna turn 42 twice. The average age of a college football fan is 54 years old. And so this is important because it has access to those younger eyeballs and a new way of consuming media. But also using ways to interact with sports that people don't exist. So that conversation is an everyday conversation. It's the nonstop one.
Gotcha.
So let me ask you, because I do think that most of our students, certainly, but a lot of our alumni and things, they kind of understand generally what esports are, because I think esports it's like I generally get what the football is.
The football?
Yeah. but if you're, like, how do you describe to those people that don't know anything about esports what it is?
It is everything, and this is a conversation, and it's a two-side conversation, because I don't think people in esports know what esports is. I don't think people that have never heard of it know what it is. And so it is interesting that I have a background that I've always been a game nerd my entire life, as you'll give me the cred for in many ways, I'm your chief nerd. I go to the dark nerd places that people, you want to know what's in your computer, I'll tell you.
I think I could give you a run for your money.
Absolutely. but I'm also a jock, and I've always been that guy. And so I wouldn't say I belong in both. I would say it's more accurate that I don't quite belong in either. Where I played Division I football. I come from the mainstream, was an all-state high school football player, did all the thing, all while watching Star Trek The Next Generation in pregame and doing those things. And so this has always been an interesting conversation to me, because when you talk to the gaming community that isn't conversant in that side, they think this has no correlation to sports and it's a different thing. And they don't want to know or understand those things. And you talk to the sports guys, and they see the nerds in their basement, and they attribute the attraction to it being an antisocial thing, so that they don't have to talk to people and things like that. And so you have these two groups of people that on separate ends of the spectrum don't know how much in common the activity that they're engaging in has with each other.
Yeah.
And so to the people on the sports side, you talk to them and you say, this is everything that informs you about the dynamic of mainstream sports should inform you about what this is. These guys have a role on their team. They have teammates. They have a coach. They're watching film on their opponent. They are practicing 20 hours a week, trying to perfect really finite, really tiny minutiae types of things to perfect their craft to get away with it. When they lose, they're upset for days. When they're winning, they do all the things sports guys do. They make this a bigger deal than it probably ought to be sometimes. To the esports guys, they think that sports guys are just mean and that they're overly aggressive, they're unnuanced, and that violent tendencies or overly aggressive tendencies are what is the attraction there. They don't understand that they're doing the same thing. They're perfecting a very finite craft that...
I'm finding that over the years, that our students are actually, I always ask our students if they play a sport. And I'm like, over the years, when I first started teaching about 10 years ago, that wasn't really the case. And now it's, half of the students are playing a sport. It's because it's not as alien. The groups aren't as alien anymore.
And when I talk about this, I always see it through the lens of my generation and of a Gen Xer. Mm-hmm. And it is absolutely true that that when you talk about these barriers between these two cultural things is an older person sort of thing. And it doesn't really exist with our current students in college nearly to the degree that it did before. And so absolutely. And when you talk about the esports team, over half of them lettered in the sport in high school.
Right.
And it's to their benefit because they've learned some lessons. They've learned that you can't freak out when you're going into the fifth game of a best of five and that you have to keep your cool. And conversely, they understand the correlation between sports and esports, and absolutely. So the conversation that I have a tendency to have is typically with people in our age demographic of where those barriers to exist. And absolutely, as this gets bigger and you can't be a billion-dollar industry without it entering the mainstream. And so this I don't know what the other side is, conversation is a lot less than it used to be. And when you talk to athletes now, they all want to be in esports. And you talk to esports guys, and they're all sports fans.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like the it used to be when people would talk about esports, it would be the same. It's like how people are hearing about TikTok all of a sudden, right? Mm-hmm. But esports is so big, and I think a lot of people thought it was going to be a fad, and I don't.
Well,
I don't think it's a fad.
Well, that's still a big part of the conversation. I will say this. Esports eats up a huge portion of the conversation right now in the gaming industry, and probably a bigger portion of the conversation in the gaming industry now than it ought to. When you talk about that esports is a billion dollar portion of $140 billion industry.
Yeah, that's not going anywhere.
Right. And so gaming isn't going anywhere, but also everyone is going into esports and it's still a relatively small portion of the streaming market and still a relatively small portion of the gaming industry total. And so while it is on a trajectory to get bigger, we in the conversation you have with the people that don't understand it, they say esports a lot when they just mean video games.
Right.
And that is certainly true as well.
So what, as it continues to grow and becomes, more recognized, more mainstream, things like that, what are, in your crystal ball view of the future, what are the big hurdles to get over? Or what are the big challenges that we're facing now that if esports is to continue to go on and we need to overcome these hurdles?
There's a lot of lessons. We should compartmentalize that conversation on two levels. There's a lot of things that college esports has to learn. And college esports and professional esports are two different animals playing on two different things. And frankly, one has eyeballs and the other does not. But pro esports is going to change a lot. And like I say, you have conversations with the esports community and they don't really understand the correlation between what they're doing in mainstream sports. And they exist on an economic model that as this increases in scope, they think this is so different, this is a new thing. But as it increases in scope and gets big and it starts to be a bigger economic force, it starts to trend back to those economic models and revenue models that mainstream sports has. You talk to a lot of these guys and they go, like, wow, maybe you guys have been doing this way for over 100 years for a reason, mm-hmm. and not just because you're old and grouchy. And so as we enter into it, we talk about free stream media. As esports gets bigger, media rights is becoming a bigger issue, and it stops being free stream media, and right. ESPN buys the rights to the Overwatch League. Right. And you see that 10 years ago, there was no dedicated arena for esports in the country. If you were going to play in, say, the North American League of Legends Championship, you were playing it on a floor of a basketball arena. Yeah, the Staples Center or Key Arena in Seattle or Madison Square Garden or those types of things. And now there are dedicated spaces, which are essentially television studios, for esports popping up everywhere. And so that's going to change. The biggest other thing is the biggest thing that has drawn us to someone to sport in the history of the world is a sense of geographical tribalism. Mm-hmm. We cheer for where the New York Yankees are almost an American symbol, right? And so are the Boston Red Sox, and the Utah Jazz are a thing here, and BYU and Utah, and there's a thing. And go back to my mom doesn't have a nuanced understanding of football, but if the University of Utah loses a football game, she will be upset for 2 days because she's part of the group, right? And so there is that part of it. Now, in esports, when every League of Legends team is in Los Angeles, because that's not where they broadcast, esports doesn't engage in those things. And so the stars of it are the players and the memes around it and their ability to be a personality and be a streamer. And as this matures and gets bigger in economic scope, they have to engage to grow those audience to back to those notions of tribalism and geographical things, which is why the Overwatch League pops up. They go back to those models. Now those teams are associated with a city, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Dallas, Vancouver, Seattle, and so those things. And so, yeah, absolutely. The next big steps is esports teams will try to affiliate themselves with large media markets of cities. And so going back, what is the future of esports? The future of esports is going back to looking a lot like sports, getting closer to it.
Right. Yeah.
Is that a good thing, in your opinion?
Depends what you want to be. And so this is a conversation, and this is a very vigorous conversation that everyone is having about, especially on college esports. There's a side that says, if we want college esports to make money, then we have to engage and do A, B, and C if money is an objective. And money is an objective. It has to be, because we have to pay for it. This does not exist on the goodwill of universities forever. It has to have a sustainable model.
Yeah.
And so to a degree it does, but if we want to make a lot of money, and there's no money. Right. So,
right. I mean, that's certainly what we found.
Right. Yeah. But say in 20 years, then this has to accomplish A, B, and C. But there's a cost to that. There's a lot of people that don't want it to become that, because if it's going to be community based and gear itself to enthusiasts in addition to competitive players and do other things, then a lot of people have this niche understanding of what it should be, and they don't need it to grow to be this behemoth to do those things. And that's a very valid argument that's the kind of thing it should be. Similarly to professional esports, it's the same conversation. Is your purpose to make this the most profitable thing you can be? It can be. And the answer to that question is always going to be yes. A publisher, sure. A game studio. And so, yeah, there's a cost to that. It will stop serving the interests of, there's a difference between balancing League of Legends for 100 million players user base and balancing League of Legends so that the professional game played at the highest level can do those sorts of things. And so right now there's way more money in balancing it for that 100 million player user base.
Yeah.
But sure. if the money ever goes to the other thing, then the game changes and things do it. And so it depends. If there's enough money there and it gets big enough, that it will change and it'll start to be geared for as a professional sport. And so there's definitely a cost and a benefit.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
What do you think is getting in the way of that? Like, do you think it is that divide between traditional sports and that system that kind of absorbs all of the time and space for people to view? Or, I mean,
getting in the way of what?
Of that change, of it becoming more mainstream. Or do you think it's just going to happen as this group of people who know what esports are gets older?
I think it is happening. I don't think it happened overnight. Mm. But it definitely is happening. And first of all, like people get ahead of themselves about the numbers of esports, and people drop the numbers of that a North American League of Legends championship did as big as an NBA finals. And it did if you game the numbers enough to do it. But it doesn't exist on that kind of scope yet. And so the purpose and the original point of every competitive game was to sell the video game as many times as possible.
Right, absolutely.
And that was the original point. And that still is the primary purpose of what it's doing. And the esports leagues still are a complement to the ultimate goal of doing that.
Right.
And as the more money goes into them as their own kind of thing, own siloed thing as professional sports, that will change more and more and more and more and more. There's an example of this that is interesting to talk about, in that the NBA 2K League dramatically changed the mechanic of their game for their professional league.
Right.
In that as a produced broadcasting thing, they wanted to make defense a valuable commodity for it to feature how good these players are. So they changed the mechanic a little bit. They changed the shooting mechanic, and they changed the game a little bit. The end result is that field goal percentages in the professional game dropped. And so your average consumer who doesn't have access to the same build of the game that the esports guys in their professional league are like, how did he miss that? That shot's easy to make. These guys aren't that good. And so they kind of violated their ultimate purpose of having their professional league, which was to sell more copies of their game. Right.
I think they forget that. I think that they are, you know, people are so enamored of how much money, how much viewership there is, that it's like they stop forgetting that was the underlying goal, which was sell more video games.
I think the biggest mistake that gets made is the players that are most visible are the really good ones, but the average ones, there's a lot more of them.
Yeah.
And people stop tuning their games to the bulk.
Everybody,
of their, you know, their consumer audience.
I'm not going to lie. That's exactly where my mindset was 5 minutes ago before you started talking about that, where I was like, oh, wait, no, that does make sense that the whole thing is pointing back. They want everybody to play Overwatch. They don't just want these 100 people to play Overwatch.
No, they want their player base to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And their professional league has to serve that purpose, or it's not serving any purpose at all.
Well, that brings up another question that one of the students asked, is that, do you think esports is a viable career? I mean, I think that's a different question than, do you think you can go and play, you know, in the NBA? That seems like I think people understand how difficult that is, but it feels like esports is harder to me.
I think it's exactly the same question if you're going to play in the NBA. In fact, if you're a video game player and we're talking about your odds of picking up a basketball and going and being a point guard for the Lakers or being a professional esports player, your odds, as crappy as they are better to go pick up a basketball and go be a point guard for the Lakers.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, was that that's interesting that you said that, because it seems like the esports thing is like, if getting into the NBA is all work, like you can work really hard and get really good, but you don't have to necessarily always win the lottery. It feels like the esports thing, you have to win the lottery too, you know?
Put this in a little bit of, well, I'm going to say this, I'm going to say something else. Put this in context here. When we first started our Rocket League team, every player on that first Rocket League team was in the 0.2 top percent of the entire player base.
Wow.
And our team was pedestrian in college esports. And none of those guys had any chance of playing professional Rocket League.
Wow.
And we weren't that good. And they were in the top 0.2% of the entire player base.
Wow.
And they're the best players on our entire campus. And they're astonishingly good. But in context of those types of things, they're not. So, and that's the conversation you have every week is with an average dad who says, my kid plays this game like 30 hours a week and get a scholarship for this. I'm like, I used to play rec league basketball for 15, 20 hours a week, but nobody cares.
Right.
And so like, it's a thing is it's highly competitive and is a really good thing. Now jobs, people talk about like, you're not going to be a player necessarily unless you're really, 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 really good. And you kind of, it's also putting a lot of eggs in that basket to want to do it. It's hard to do it and do the other things, right? But the jobs in this industry that exist around it to support it and exist, like there's a lot of money in it, so there's a lot of money in it and a lot of money, because there's a lot of people getting hired to do it. is all over the place. So the production of esports, streaming esports, the logistics of it, the game developers are still off the hook on what they do. So there's more jobs in this industry all the time. And it's one of the things like, let's stop separating esports from just the gaming industry because these are all the same jobs.
Yeah, right.
But it's going to be that. But also, in my corner of the world, when people reject the notion of, well, you're just doing it for the money, like, yeah, it's because I want to pay people to do things. Right. I want that money so I can hire people. I want to create jobs in esports. So it's not necessarily that, like, I'm not buying a Maserati with the money.
We all work for the University of Utah. We're not buying Maseratis.
Right. And so, but in just 3 years, like in 2017, when we did this, there was less than 30 teams doing it.
Right.
And now there's over 200. How many more jobs in esports are there? Right. And so in another 5 years, I would guess that pretty much every NCAA school has some notion of support for esports. How many more jobs are there going to be then? And so when we talk about these economic models to the students who always reject the ratification and formalization of college esports, don't. we're trying to make jobs.
Right.
So AJ, what's the best way for someone who wants to get involved in esports? Is it something, because we talked about winning the lottery, we've talked about, you know, being in the top percentage still doesn't maybe necessarily yield a professional career. Do you have to have been playing Overwatch for 10 years? Well, it hasn't been around for 10 years, but you know what I mean? Like, do you have to, if someone wants to get in now, if they're a freshman right now, is it already too late or what steps should they take?
I really, there's a few ways to answer this question of, I don't really understand when people just say, I want to work in esports and I'll do anything to work in esports. And to me, it's like, don't want that. It's like, I want to go work for a game studio and I'll do anything to get there. Like, well, there's a lot of people that are very unhappy working in a game studio and they're doing really terrible things. And the glamour of I work in video games would end really fast when it's just your job and you'd be doing something you don't want to do. And so similarly, if you're an engineer in the game industry, you can understand that you like being an engineer. It does, whether it's on a video games or those other things. And so, and there's a lot of places you can do those things and be happy. You might love video games and love creating those things and being creative about it, but there's even a few outlets for that are just outside of video games. And so think of it in terms of what it is you like to do. Do you like being an engineer? Do you like graphic design? Do you like videos? Do you like videography? Do you like all those things? And esports is a lot of those things. And you might like being around people that love the same thing you like, and is absolutely certain. But there are conversely, there are too many people that are doing free work, including at the University of Utah.
Right, right.
That are working way too hard for far too little. And it is one of the biggest industries of taking advantage of people and young people that want to be involved with it any way they can and taking advantage of their enthusiasm to do it. And so what I would say to that is actually understand what you like to do and what makes you happy to do and find that in esports if that's what you want to do. But don't, it's like the same thing of same thing we talk about every day in EAE. I like to live in a house. That doesn't necessarily mean I want to build them.
Right.
I love to play video. I love to play video games. It is not the same thing as I like to make them. I also like to make them a lot.
You do.
having a conversant understanding of what that means is really important before you want to get involved with esports. But if you do want to get involved with esports and want experience doing it, there are tons of opportunities for us because we constantly need help and have two little bodies doing it. And particularly with the production and making anyone know that we exist. Conversely, there is a student club here which needs a lot of enthusiasm and less people know about it than they used to, especially in the current circumstances. They're still doing a lot of things to keep students engaged. So if you are interested in esports, if you are interested in gaming communities and you just want to be around like-minded people that like what you like, there's lots of opportunities here to do those things.
Awesome.
So we have just a few more questions. We're kind of getting close to our time. I think you maybe answered this, but maybe You tell me. What are the most important general skills an esports player can have?
So I do have an answer to this, and I'm going to come really hard. Here's the biggest reason why on our team, there's a tendency for our guys to have been athletes in high school.
Mm-hmm. And girls.
And girls, yes. I get that wrong all the time. and we have had female. We should talk about that a little bit too. We don't have enough of them. And there's no good reason why we don't have enough of them. So we need to fix that.
It's almost as if he has access to the question sheet.
I know.
Because that's a very big one on the question sheet. Yes. Continue, sorry.
People that are getting involved in esports are, particularly at our level, when we talk about how good those guys were while they're pedestrian, mm-hmm. they've never been in a room where they weren't the best player they've ever heard of.
Right.
And when they're in highly competitive esports, all of a sudden, they're not the best player they've ever heard of. And it's the first time. And there's getting used to, I really need to play well to have a chance to beat this guy across from me, is something you learn if you strike out in Little League when you're 12 years old and do all those things and those things. And our guys typically have to learn that lesson the hard way, and that it's not okay to lose and then behave in a very poor way sometimes. And so not tilting is the biggest lesson we have to learn. And if you want to be good at esports, figure out in that state of mind of yours, and no matter how good you are, that the other guy is better than you and he might beat you, and you need to figure out a way to compete and perform well and get better with guys that are just as good as you are or better than you are.
Well, that feels like such great advice just generally, because I think that in lots of, especially game development, resilience is important, because there is a lot, you know, you can get better, you can learn more. And I don't want to say work harder, because I think that that's true, but also it's not the only thing that you can do.
Well, and just in general in the gaming industry, is you're going into a room, you're a talented person going into a room with a lot of other talented people.
Yeah. You know? And I think actually always being open to learning from everyone is such a critical thing. And certainly most of the very good game developers I know get their ideas and get motivated in all different areas, not just, I want to get good at this one thing. I need to know this one thing better. It's like, you know. Well, I'm worried about people as a human, like as a whole, top laner.
When I had Adam's job, the biggest thing I said is, before anything you're good at matters, the people that are in the room with you have to want to be in the room with you.
Right.
And if they don't, then all the things that you're good at are going to have a hard time mattering. And so that seems to be the first things first kind of conversation.
Yep, I agree totally.
Do you find, AJ, just really quick answer, do you find that there's a certain degree of disillusionment that comes? Because I know it happens in game development. I saw it a ton with coworkers and things like that. People get into game development because they think it's awesome. And it is 100%. But then they get there and they're like, oh, wait, this is maybe not necessarily as sexy or as romantic as it was in my head. Do you think that exists in the world of esports as well?
Well, it does exist in the world of esports, and esports is bigger than it does make money right now. And just like video games are bigger than they make money right now. And so the crunch culture and making people work on the cheap, and we always talk about that there's so many people that are being taken advantage of so somebody can make money. And there are publishers are making money in esports. People that sell gaming computers and peripherals are making more. Third-party entrepreneurs are getting murdered in esports right now, yeah. And are living off this hype and not making any money at all. And yeah. So there's a huge amount of disillusionment, and that's part of what esports is going to have to go through, is because esports exists on capital and hype, and there's going to have to be a course correction where we're going to figure out where's the equilibrium that third-party entrepreneurs can also make money into it. And if there's a big bubble that bursts between then we're going to slow us all down. And college esports is the same thing, because there's a lot of those people that are selling colleges on, there's so much money here, and like, no, there's not. There's no money here at all. even though there's a lot of interest to it, and interest and money is not the same thing at all. And so we exist both on esports and college esports, existing in this thing where everyone wants to be a part of and everyone's interested into, but we got to find an equilibrium of where there's revenue generation, where the sustainability model exactly is. And everybody that wants to work in esports is going to figure out that it's a hard time to make a living in it because the people at the top aren't making any money doing it. And so, yeah, it's rough.
So at the, we're getting to the end. So one of the, like we have actually a lot of questions that students are asking about, and maybe I could sum it up, but more like, can you describe maybe what it looks like for one of the team members, like a day in the life? Like how much do they practice? Do they, you know, I know that we're concerned about their mental and physical health, their, you know, things like that. What are the games like? Is there a lots of travel, stuff like that? So can you just in, you know, mm-hmm. 2 or 3 minutes, just describe what our students are actually doing as esports players for us?
So they're at the University of Utah, they're required to be good students. They have an academic thing. So the first thing first is that we have a higher academic standard than mainstream sports. And because we want to tell everyone in the world that we have a higher academic standard. And so they tend to be STEM students. So they tend to be a lot of engineers. And so that's first thing first. And that occupies a huge portion of time. On top of that, they're practicing 15 to 20 hours a week. And it's not the fun kind type of solo queue, which is just go into a ranked game of the thing and play the type of thing. They have a role to fulfill. So they're trying to perfect what their coach says to them. So they're typically practicing in such a way that isn't, you know, probably not the funnest way to do it. They would want to do it the way they play the game. So they're getting perfecting that, but they're doing it because it is such a thrill to be able to compete at those things at the highest level. So they're working hard in class. They're working hard on a team. They have a coach that is guiding them to be the best they can be. They don't get full rides here that do it. So there's a lot of them have a job on top of it. So it's a big ask to get them to commit to this thing, and it's a big ask to get them to do it. And so those guys, it's not necessarily what drives them is that they love this game so much, is they are highly competitive people that mm-hmm. really want to engage in competition against other really high level people. And that's their interest.
Interesting. I had a follow-up to that, but I would be remiss if we didn't talk about it because it is a very important thing. You mentioned the lack of female representation and playership. Is that as easily chalk-upable as like, well, that's just the way gaming is, or is there something different about it? What are your thoughts about that?
See, I feel like I spend a lot of my time defending esports from really unfair criticisms to it about the violence argument and all the research we can point to of the correlation that doesn't exist between a video game and violence. Now, and I hate having that conversation because we should be having this conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
Because this is an extraordinarily valid and fixable thing in esports in that there, when you look at the student communities and the student clubs and you see that the composition of people that are interested in this are about 50-50 men and women. And then the higher you go, the more, the less there is a female participation of the higher you go. But you see that there are plenty of good female players and they're just not there. Mm-hmm. And so there is a cultural problem in esports in that in a million different ways, from the way women are portrayed into the games to the way women have to exist in game studios and they're disinvited from participating there, to the way that our culturally and the way we prop up esports, where we are disinviting female participation and the way we treat them in the toxic behavior in our Discord servers and the way where we are pushing them out the door and making them feel very unwanted, that has to be fixed and we have to address it and we have to police our communities really hard. We have to understand why it's happening too. And so absolutely, there are not enough women involved and there is no compelling reason whatsoever that they're not, because they can be just as good at these games as all the guys. They are just as good as these games, all the guys. They don't want to because it's too much trouble to participate in these things. And we really need to fix that. And just like on college campuses, that in every other industry where college is played a huge role in fixing fixing these problems in our societies, college esports, this should be one of the biggest things that we take on and fixing this problem on college campuses and to engage with it. And so the fact that this year we don't have any women on scholarship player games is really something that we need to address and fix. So if anyone hears this and you want to participate in our teams, like we welcome you to come and do it. And we want to be a part of the answer to fix this problem, because it is a huge problem. And all of the other criticisms of esports should take a backseat to this one, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I agree.
Thank you, AJ, for that. I couldn't agree more. I think all kinds of diversity is good for all, you know, for all of us. I say that about game development all the time.
And the other part is all to caveat on that. When we talk about I was at a talk at GDC, and we're talking about how all the money of esports and all the media is being driven to the PC market. Mm. And that people from different backgrounds play games on different platforms, then there's a different thing. And the fact that esports doesn't support console gaming and do all those things means that we make the room a lot wider.
Yep.
And that we also need to address that. And so the attitudes that PC or nothing on these things are things that we should evaluate, and maybe those things mean different things than we think they do. And so that's another thing that we, as a conversation we're having, things we need to engage in and things we need to fix about this. And so don't say PC Master Race anymore. Like, never say that again, like, anyone, because that there's other things that are associated with that you might not want to be associated with.
Words are important and they mean things.
On that note, is there, we're just about out of time. So is there anything you'd like to close with, any extra information you'd like to give to people who might be watching this or listening, to how they can get involved with Crimson Gaming or with our esports group or anything else?
So Crimson Gaming has a Discord, and I reach out to Corinne if you want me to invite you to it. I don't know how to do it off the top of where they have a public Discord with over 1,000 people in it to engage in on-campus student activities. Even in the current circumstances, there's a lot of online activities. They did a D&D campaigns on Discord last week. That was actually a ton of fun to do this.
Love that, yeah.
Now we're going to be doing later on in the semester, doing some intramural League of Legends and some Valorant. That we are going to support as a collaboration between Utah Esports and Crimson Gaming. And so whether you're an enthusiast, if you just like these things, there's plenty of ways that we can, you know, come hang out and with people that think all the things that you think and are like-minded. And one of the important things that I'm engaging into is we really do want to provide a platform for the really competitive players, but also the enthusiasts that want to hang out, because I have nowhere to go if there's no place to go. Because I certainly am not an effective competitive player. So there's a lot of different ways, and please, there's the League of Legends Student Association, there's the Smash Club there's an FGC Club, and there's Crimson Gaming. So there's a lot of places to go to if you want a place to come hang out and play some games and do things. And there's the competitive team, and we're gonna teach you how to be a U fan and understand that when we beat BYU in League of Legends, we've never lost them in any esports thing ever. And I have an announcement. We never, ever will, ever. They'll never beat us.
I feel like that's true.
September 2nd, 2020, AJ Dimmick has thrown down the gauntlet.
They will never beat us.
Well, AJ, thank you so much for joining Adam and I, and we really appreciate all of your insights into esports, and I can't wait to see you in person someday again.
Yay!
Thanks, everybody.